Hey, I'm Tracy Burns. Welcome to Five Things. I'm a financial advisor with UBS. And as many of you know, I'm on a mission to help women through divorce, transition, empower them. I have a soft spot for female founders, entrepreneurs, small businesses, and of course, closing the wage gap. You're going to learn five things here, then you're going to move on with your day because we all have things to do and we're all on timelines. My guest today inspires me every day. And I thought about this and she's going to laugh. You're like 10 years younger than me and your resume like wraps mine by like pages, by
girl,
the way.
PR does not pay the bills. It does not pay the bills. So, you know,
oh my God. All right.
The paper they're written on.
It's beautifully written though. Let me tell you. So Alyssa Rapp is here with us, CEO of Surgical Solutions, managing partner of her own AJR Ventures. She does a ton of angel investing. She's a lecturer at Stanford Business School. She's written two books. One we're going to talk about today. The first, though, Bottlenose Guide to Wine Around the World in 80 Sips, is how Alyssa and I met. Our love of the wine world brought us together what feels like a million years ago.
It sure does, especially right now when every day feels like a month during COVID.
Right. So to put things in perspective, it is April 2020. We are in the middle of COVID. We are on lockdown. Alyssa and I only see each other via Zoom like the rest of you. And she has these amazing five tips for you today about pivoting and getting your team aligned. But Alyssa, before we get to that, because we are in the middle of Corona and you are the CEO of Surgical Solutions, tell us one quickly what the company does and where we are in this process.
Sure. And Tracy, thank you so much for having me on. Delighted to join you as always. The Surgical Solutions is a healthcare services company. We provide minimally invasive surgical support services to 30 hospitals in 9 states across the country. And what that really means is we provide skilled and trained technicians, we provide capital equipment, we provide instrumentation, and we provide data and dashboarding all to our partners who are the hospitals. And our trained people come in with our equipment and our instruments, and we help provide the preoperative room setup, the intraoperative room support, the postoperative room breakdown and decontamination. And then we take those contaminated scopes and instruments down to the sterile processing department, which is where all of the decontamination happens in a hospital for everything that's used. And you try to wipe it clean and sterilize it so that no pathogens, et cetera, and infection is passed from one patient to the next. And then we prep what's called the case carts and help get them ready for the next set of cases that day or the next day. And we are paid on a fixed fee per case basis. So we really help hospitals risk share with us. And so they don't have to hire a bunch of expensive people, train them, buy millions of dollars of equipment. We take all that on and they just pay us as they go, which makes us a great partner for people like the New York Health and Hospital System or Spectrum Health System and Michigan, and we're proud to be partners of such great establishments. And so we've got 206 employees and 185 of them on the front lines of COVID. And it's been a journey. It's been an experience like most small and medium-sized hospitals. We've seen 80% of our elective surgery case volume get canceled in the last 4 weeks. We hope that will be coming back sooner rather than later. As a result of where we are in the world, it looks like in May, some of those elective cases will begin to be rescheduled. And then thereafter, June, hopefully more, and July, hopefully more. So it is entirely possible that we will be, from an elective surgery standpoint, on the backside of COVID sooner rather than later. But the challenge is of course, irrespective of your politics, the challenge is, of course, when do you reopen the economy and when do you reopen with the fear of a resurgence of COVID later this year, which seems to be all but inevitable. My personal view is a rolling economy reopening with a mandate to wear masks, as unpleasant as they are, is probably the safest.
Yeah.
The data I've seen is that the transmission rate for two people wearing masks is less than 1% if you're also abiding by social distancing. So I'd rather see economies reopen with appropriate mask use rather than keeping everything in lockdown. I also know that what were originally elective cases can become emergent cases, i.e. dire, if they wait too long to happen. So
yeah.
I'm hopeful that our hospitals will make the right decisions and allow for those elective cases to continue to be scheduled and rescheduled, not just for our sake, obviously, but for that of the patients. But it's been harrowing, and our business has seen the struggles with this as much as all the rest. So I am living the movie, in other words.
which is a perfect lead-in to your most recent production. You authored this amazing book, Leadership and Life Hacks, Insights from a Mom, Wife, Entrepreneur, and Executive. And so juggling all this at home, you know, we're not even going to get into like the trials and tribulations of homeschooling, because you are doing the work of Job. All you parents that have to homeschool little kids, like, I count my blessings, I don't have to do that. But you are frontline as a manager in the midst of this crisis, which is exactly why I thought you'd be the perfect person to talk about all this. And so diving into your five things here, your first one is make sure your team's all on the same dang page, right? And then there's this big conversation about, do we pivot to adjust or do we just throw in the towel? That's a really difficult decision.
It is and it isn't, right? Because at the end of the day, when to pivot versus when to quit and making sure everyone's all aligned on the same page is fundamental to strategy. And it's fundamental to, in my mind, good leadership and good business. And the when to pivot versus when to quit from on a personal standpoint is very easy. I've lived both movies, as we were saying before. And so, you know, in my first company that you knew a lot about with Bottlenotes, we had started as an e-commerce play. We ended up, due to a regulatory shift that was anti-consumer and anti-small business and anti-winery and anti-tech, deciding and needing to pivot in order to stay alive and relevant. We pivoted to a media company, and it's in that era that we met.
And right. So just so everybody knows by way of background, Bottlenotes, Alyssa was so ahead of the game putting wine online. I mean, this was like unheard of back then, prior to it becoming a media company.
Yes.
Right. So when did you launch that?
So in 2005, I launched Bottlenotes, which was originally described as the Netflix for wine. We sent wines tailored to people's personal taste using patent-pending matching technology. And it was fun, and it was ahead of the time, and it was all those innovative things. And yet, as I'm sure Friendster can say about Facebook, being first or too early to a market isn't always best. The regulatory shift happened. We pivoted to a media company. And in that pivot, I realized that you have to – pivoting strategies is something that smart companies do all the time to stay ahead of the curve. And it's why, you know, Netflix is still here and why Blockbuster, you know, went down in flames.
Right.
But the reality is that we had alignment of internal core values of who we were as a company, our goals and our mission, and what we stood for. We still wanted to educate and entertain the millennial generation wine enthusiast. And we knew what we wanted to help boutique and estate producers from around the world and larger wine brands and lifestyle brands reach our next generation, millennial generation audience. And so while we had to invert our business model, and instead of making money when people chose to transact with us in a subscription context by joining a wine club, we had to invert our model and become a media platform where brands paid us for digital advertising through our newsletter, The Daily Sip, or our large scale interactive events around the world in 80 Sips, like the book. We knew that we were still educating and entertaining that end consumer, and simply what had to shift was the revenue model of who paid us to do that, where the brands were then paying us for access to our audience. So because we had alignment of core values, we knew what we stood for, we knew where we were going, and we were clear in that goal, that is when it's obvious and sensible to pivot. Versus a different business experience I had working with different partners a handful of years ago in my AJR Ventures years, I was advising them on a tremendous business opportunity they had thought of and I collaborated with them on for a while. And it was really a big idea and I was excited about it and they were excited about it and I was owning it and helping run with it and we were co-founding it. And every time after the first 3 or 4 months, I thought we should be going a little bit more to the right, they wanted to go a little bit more to the left. And every time I thought that we should be going a little bit higher up, they wanted to go a little bit lower down. And I just saw these schisms in strategy, but what were really schisms in values. And I asked one of my mentors after about a year and a quarter, year and a half of this, I said to him, listen, I love this idea. It's one of the bigger ideas I've worked on. And I think it could really be something, which is, by the way, why I've got, you know, I'm voting with my feet and doing this for some cash and some equity. But I also don't like a lot of what I'm seeing, and it's really frustrating me, and I don't really know how to reconcile those two things. And Joel Peterson, chairman of JetBlue, head of the Hoover Institute, colleague at Stanford Business School, and my favorite professor as a student, said to me, Alyssa, people show you who they are early in relationships, and it's your job to pay attention. And if you don't like what you're seeing in these potential business partners in year one, it's only going to get worse from here. And so I walked.
But- But that's perfect lead into your second point, which is vote with your pocketbook. Like, if you want people to follow you off the ledge, man, you better be ready to go. So if you're going to walk,
you better be ready to write the check. You better be ready to vote with your feet. You better be willing to do it. I gave a talk yesterday to the Women's Food Services Forum, and one entrepreneur said, you know, she wants to work on a side hustle. Do you have any advice? I said, yeah, figure out how much you're willing to invest in it. Time, money, prototypes. None of these things don't just happen for free.
Right.
I mean, you have to work hard. Time is ironically the most expensive and the least expensive resource to invest, but you know, nothing just pops out of thin air. You gotta vote with your feet, and you gotta vote with your pocketbook for sure.
Your third point, I think, is the most fascinating of this whole thing. You said to acknowledge fear and move through it. And I love that, like, especially now, we're saying it's really friggin' scary. Like, this is horribleness, but we're going to do this together.
Yeah. I mean, listen, fear exists for a reason, right? Fear is intended to warn us of danger. And so I ended up the years that Hal and I lived in California, I loved to hike. And in my
Hal being your fabulous husband, by the way.
Hal being my husband, Hal Morris, yes. And so when I was in my late 20s and I went hiking with girlfriends cavalierly, pre-marriage, pre-kids, but, you know, with Hal still, you know, at 5 in the morning or at 8 at night, he'd kind of look at me cross-eyed, why are you doing that? And then one time we saw a mountain lion, of which I'm terrified. And then I decided no more hiking at 5 a.m. or 8 p.m. when they're, you know, nocturnal and hunting. And so then, I'd still go at 2 in the afternoon. And for a while, you know, or for a lunch break or whatever. And for a while, the effect was Pavlovian. I'd still be afraid, right? Because I'd seen this mountain lion and it scared the living daylights out of me. And all I could get out of my head was the image of it unzipping me with its claws. And I said to myself, 2 in the afternoon, the damn thing is asleep. This is not when they hunt. This is not what they do. And I can either stand at the bottom of this hill paralyzed in fear of what could happen, or I can say, hi, mountain lion. You are there somewhere. I acknowledge your existence. I'm going to take my fear of you, park it over here on left field, and simply move on with my life and keep going with my day and take the rapid heartbeat and the, you know, fight or flight reaction and just, you know, beat it into submission. Because that's a literal metaphor, but figuratively that's what fear does. It does serve a purpose, but it also can have residual effects that are really paralyzing and completely unhelpful.
Completely crippling.
And there is absolutely no value in stewing in those feelings when you know rationally they are not either A, about to get you, or B, going to help you.
So let's bring this like to current day, because I love that analogy, right? And it happens to all of us. But so current day, COVID-19, or, you know, God willing, someone's listening to this in 10 years and something else is, you know, has happened that is causing us to pause. How do I relate that to my business, to my employees? Like, what if they're sitting home, they're scared? Or what if I'm thinking, you know, I have this business that requires people to actually leave their homes so that I can sell things. And people don't want to leave their homes. Yeah. So now I'm scared to death.
Yeah. So I had this conversation with one of my former board members, and she's in her 70s and had some health issues. And she said, I started out pretty cavalier, but as the days go on, I'm getting more and more afraid. And right. I said, listen, again, are you taking proper precautions with social distancing for the sake of COVID, the COVID conversation? Are you standing 6 feet apart from people? Are you minimizing your contact with people? Are you wearing a surgical mask, surgical grade mask, and are you putting it on appropriately? You know, are you washing your hands religiously? If you are doing these things, and there is always inherently some risk in life. There's a risk anytime any one of us gets on an airplane.
Right. Gets in the car.
Exactly. But the point is, if you do everything you can to mitigate your risk, and then back to my original point about goals and mission, have a goal. Going to the grocery store, minor goal. Saying to my 206-person team on a town hall yesterday, we as a firm, our value proposition is even more valuable on the other side of COVID than it was before, because we risk share with our hospital partners economically and provide them with crucial ability to flex up their staffing with the surge in volume we expect on the other side of this. So we are more valuable on the other side of this than we even are today. So now the question is just to get from how to here to there. Have a goal, eye on the prize. Where are you sailing? you know, talking to great financial planners and advisors like you and saying, listen, I'm afraid I don't have enough cash for retirement. I'm afraid I'm not going to have enough because of this. Great. You're an expert. Tracy Burns is an expert. Talk to an expert. Get advice on charting your course to whatever island it is you're sailing to, literally or figuratively, and then have a plan. And focus on that, not the waves crashing around you or the storm 100 miles offshore, because you can't control those things. They don't help
you. Like, right. Start looking at the light at the end of the tunnel. I think so many of us are starting to feel like there is one, even if you can't see it. And to your next point, taking care of your people and over communicating. You held a town hall. You're talking to them about how what we're going to do on the other side. It's almost like you're Tom Brady and you're envisioning catching the touchdown. Like I became a fan of Simon Sinek, and I'm probably saying his name wrong. The motivational speaker.
Cool.
Really cool dude. He's British too, so I'm a sucker for the accent. But he did say that a true leader doesn't have to be at the top of the organizational chart, right? You're a leader if you care about all the people around you, to the right and to the left. So just it doesn't even have to fall on, you know, Alyssa Rapp, CEO, to give a damn about the people in the company. It's incumbent upon everyone, because based on your previous points, right? If we're all on the same page, we all have the same values and morals, like we all believe, it's like, you know, I've said this before, there's no I in team. If you're all on the same team, then the org chart doesn't matter. Everyone should just care about each other and talk and be open.
100% true. But even more than that, it's sort of like the challenge that we have in raising children, which you have done 3 times and I'm only obviously doing twice officially. But like,
means I drink more than you do.
Nope. And you know, I do have stepchildren too, so that's a different conversation.
Okay, fine. You mean
that? That it's again about values. If the core values are well understood, which personally I find easier to instill corporately than with my children, but
right.
when they're well understood, the decision making becomes obvious. Because what we stand for and what we believe in and what our goals and mission are drive the decision making. You don't need someone telling you what to do.
Right. And that's it, bottom line. Yeah. And again, leads perfectly now into your final point, which is, especially in this era, think entrepreneurially. And I've heard so many people say this, but I'd love your thoughts on what if, you know, you even as a large company now have to think entrepreneurially, but what if your people don't have that entrepreneurial gumption in them? I mean, not everyone is hired to be entrepreneurial. Not everyone has it in them. So how do you make them think that way?
I think that being nimble and being adaptable is innate to some. So part of what you do from an organizational standpoint, if you're not in a startup where by definition everyone needs to be to some degree nimble and adaptable, is you find those entrepreneurial minds and mindsets within the company, and then you give them a lot of oxygen to breathe and nurture and evolve.
Yeah, good one.
And then if those are there, then you know, leaders then can attract followers and guide them along. And the other thing is that it also, you know, it starts from the top, right? It as a result of this current crisis, current being the COVID-19 crisis of April 2020, where we are today, I think there's a massive opportunity for entrepreneurs out there, because we're all effectively being brought back to the starting blocks, like on a quarter mile track. If you watch in the Olympics, right. You know, people get to the starting blocks, the gun goes off and you go. And the people who get out of the gate fastest on the other side of this, even if it's a rolling reentry, are going to be able to accelerate quickly and move explosively, are going to be the leanest and most hungry people out there. That's definitionally an entrepreneur. So to think like an entrepreneur doesn't mean at this point in moment in time, you have to have a brilliant new idea that's going to set the world on fire and create tens of millions of dollars of shareholder value. What you need to be able to do is, for this specific race of this moment in time in history, get to the starting blocks, train your mind, train your team, train yourself, come up with an action plan that allows you to get out of the gates, accelerate quickly, and move leanly. Because that's what it's going to take for big companies and small to recover.
Yeah, that's like That's an amazing point, though. You don't have to reinvent, like, you don't have to come up with a whole new product. Although, and there will be people who do that, because this is what happens in times like this. New things are created. I fall back on Trader Joe's every single time. It was created during the 1950s recession, and I can't live without it. But you don't have to reinvent the wheel, right? You just have to figure out a new way to get your product to the people. That's pretty much it.
It's an entrepreneurial, lean, nimble, and agile go-to-market strategy post-COVID.
Yeah, like don't overthink it. Just like figure it out.
Don't overstaff it. Don't over-resource it. Be lean, be nimble, explode out of the gate, be entrepreneurial. That's, to me, the right and necessary approach here, because otherwise the recovery won't happen as fast as it has to.
This is amazing. We could talk to Alyssa all day, and for all, and people should know that the reason that she references doing sprints and things on a track, because I don't actually go to a track, is that she has done this for pleasure.
Lately, it's my Peloton treadmill. So, you know, don't
like hurdles just because. I mean, I won't even walk on a track without like complaining. So you're awesome.
Pleasure,
by the way,
to be with you. Thank you for having me.
You are awesome, and everyone should pick up her book. I'll include the link on the site as well. Alyssa, I can't thank you enough. I know you have so much going on these days. So,
pleasure is
so
mine. Appreciate it. Delighted to be with you, and look forward to talking again soon.
This presentation is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. Neither UBS Financial Services, Inc. nor any of its employees provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your personal tax or legal advisor regarding your personal circumstances. In providing wealth management services to clients, we offer both investment advisory and brokerage services, which are separate and distinct and differ in material ways. For information, including the different laws and contracts that govern, visit ubs.com/workingwithus. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, SIPC.